Fall is a time when you kind of turn inward a bit and think about home, including food, and it's a great time to check in with Beth Dooley, Minneapolis food writer and cookbook author who loves to focus on local food. Welcome, Beth.
Hey, it's so nice to be with you. This is great.
Thank you.
What a day.
I know. Let me give folks just a little background, if you don't mind. So Beth Dooley has covered the local food scene in Northern Heartland for 30 years. She writes for Minneapolis St. Paul Magazine, the Taste section of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, the Heavy Table, and appears regularly on Care 11. That's the NBC affiliate in the Minneapolis area. NPR Appetites with Tom Cran. She's author of Minnesota's Bounty, the Farmer's Market Cookbook, Northland Heartland Kitchen with co-author Lucia Watson of Savoring the Seasons, and Northern Heartland, among other books. I mean, it goes on and on. So in addition, in addition to writing about local food in Northern Heartland, Beth guides local food trips for Wilderness Inquiry via Taste of the Apostles. And she's presented to college students and community groups. She teaches cooking classes at the University of Minnesota Landscape Arboretum. She lives in Minneapolis with her husband and three sons. Oh, my God, Beth, you do it all.
Oh, it's so fun, though. You know, I teach up at North House, too.
Well, and of course.
I've got a grain class coming up. I don't think it might be full. I'm not sure. People should check. But God, that's such a great resource. I love that place,
isn't it? And you were up here. Yeah. You were up here just a couple weeks ago as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly. We did. I have another book called Savory Sweet, which is preserves from the north, simple preserves from the North Country. So we were teaching those, and then we did a class on apples. And before that, I did their. I helped cook for the flannel formal, which was super fun.
Oh.
Yeah, it was super fun.
This is a great time of year for food because you're wrapping up a harvest, you're looking towards the holidays. What kind of things are you doing on the home cooking front right now?
You know, it's a great time to preserve, and apples are just going crazy right now. And, you know, I was up in Grand Marais. When I was up in Grand Marais recently, I was blown away by how good your co-op is in stocking really local varieties of apples, and it was great because they had everything. One of my favorite apples right now is the keepsake apple. It's perfect for it's small, so you can throw it in a lunchbox, but it also makes a fabulous sauce and a really good pie and really good apple butter. And then the pears are beautiful right now, and people forget that we have really lovely local pears. There's a variety called Moon Glow that's especially good. And another one called Luscious. They're so well named. They're all really good. yeah, I know. Aren't those great names? And then, of course, we have all these beautiful squashes. So, you know, we have a nice recipe for squash butter in our Savory Sweet Cookbook. And then roasting squash with maple syrup or throwing cranberries in is always a nice thing to do. So lots of stuff going on. Wild ricing. People are bringing their wild rice harvest, which is great. So, you know, there's just a lot of good stuff going on.
So you write a lot about eating locally and seasonally. Talk about doing that in northern Minnesota where, you know, there are a few challenges and probably some opportunities.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there obviously isn't a lot of things coming out of the ground in the middle of February, but we still have fabulous cheeses and wonderful farmstead meats, pork and some of the cured meats like bacon and artisan sausages, you know, the milk, the dairy, cheeses, maple syrup, butter, dried fruits, dried cranberries, dried blueberries. You know, there's grains are coming on strong these days. So there are farmers growing farro, which is a beautiful heritage grain. You know, we think of it as being Italian, but a lot of our local farmers are growing it now. And a lot of organic farmers are getting into growing the dent corn and the field corns that make a beautiful cornmeal. So people should look for those because you can make terrific polentas with those and beautiful, you know, I don't know, cornmeal biscuits and corn cakes and things like that. So, you know, it's a lot of things that, you know, maybe we're not eating, you know, fresh tomatoes in the middle of January, but I don't think we should be, you know, we should be looking for some of these local foods. A lot of the, we grow a lot of storage crops, which are great. So there are actually varieties of carrots that are sweeter in February because they've been harvested in right after the frost, you know, before the ground gets really hard, and then they're stored in sawdust, and they are especially good after their carbohydrates have converted to sugars. So people should look for the local carrots in, say, January. Those local storage carrots in January and February, they're great. Same thing with sweet potatoes. There's beautiful local varieties of sweet potatoes. And I saw those at the at your co-op, you know. And those would be great. Those store really well. Same thing with the hard squashes and their beets coming on. So, you know, again, a lot of the root vegetables are especially good in the wintertime. And that's what we want to eat because they're kind of sweet and they're, you know, they're soft textured and they roast beautifully. Or you can steam them or mash them. And, you know, they just, they kind of, they're what we want, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, So it's really not that hard to eat locally in the wintertime. There's a wonderful co-op down in Northfield, Minnesota, that does its local food challenge in February. And what the co-op does then is they move their sweet potatoes and their russet potatoes and their Yukon Gold potatoes, all those local potatoes and the local squashes and their storage crops and stuff up to the front of the store. And they move their bananas and their oranges and all the stuff that gets shipped into the back. And it makes a big difference in how people shop.
I bet it does.
So, you know, so it's pretty cool because all of a sudden people go, oh, yeah. So it's not that you don't want to eat, you know, it's fine to have oranges in the dead of winter. It's fine to have tomatoes once in a while, but they're not going to taste as good as the ones that you get in August. So you might as well go with the stuff that goes by, you know, nearby. So,
indeed.
Kind of like
so
that.
So what do you say to people who think that eating organic foods and locally grown foods is too expensive?
You know, there are a lot of reasons for that. I think people need to drill down and understand why that's the case. The primary reason why is because of commodity price supports that are given to corn and soy farmers that depress the price of those foods, okay? So those foods are in the market are artificially supported. They're not, if those commodity price supports and the crop loss insurance tax dollars, that's where a lot of our tax money goes. If those were removed from those farmers, the price of that food would be a lot more, okay? And I also think because we have so much cheap food, we don't value our food. So if you were to do, take a guess as to how much of our disposable income right now goes towards food.
You want me to guess? I would say 30%.
Mm-hmm. It's way lower than that.
Really?
Closer to 10 or 15. And guess what it is in France?
I bet it's closer to what I guessed. 30%.
It's closer to 80%.
Wow.
A lot, okay? And guess what we pay for health care?
80?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, you know, guess what we're, you know? So, you know, I mean, it's like, let's remember that food is medicine.
Exactly.
Right? And there's so many chronic illnesses that are food related.
Mm-hmm.
Obesity, diabetes, heart issues, joint issues that can be cured by eating good food. So I think as a country, we need to reassess where we want our tax dollars to go and, you know, how we want to live, really, because food is health. So, you know, it's sort of a question of values. And it's, you know, frankly, it's something that politicians don't want to address. I mean, even Bernie Sanders, who I thought was great, took on Wall Street, but he did not want to take on the Farm Bill. So until we begin to consider the reasons as to why our food is so cheap, we're not going to crack this nut. And there would actually be a lot more parity between organic and, sustainably grown food and, you know, food that's grown with chemicals, if those commodity price supports and crop loss insurance was removed.
Yeah.
So I think we need to address that.
Do you feel like we're going in the right direction? Are we starting to make some gains there?
I think we are. You know, when you look at the work that's been done, I mean, I was down in Finland the last time I was up there, and I saw the agroecology work that they're doing to grow this incredible permaculture farm that has all of these crops and bees that, you know, permaculture means that the land will basically take care of itself, right? You know, you plant with cover crops and you, you know, it's a no-till method of planting so that you don't suffer the same kind of erosion, so you don't need chemicals, and you choose crops that are really well-suited to that particular area. And they have lots of perennial crops. They have lots of berries and lots of hardwoods that give nuts and those kinds of things. So it's a pretty exciting project, and they're growing them using hugaculture, where things are grown in raised beds with really rich compost. Mm-hmm. And so they're taking care of their soil, and that's a terrific initiative that is that the University of Minnesota is engaged in with the community members there, and they're building it out. So there are a lot of partnerships from a variety of nonprofits and stuff. We're seeing this going on all over the country, so it's really kind of a grassroots movement, and it's fabulous. In the Twin Cities area, for instance, there's a lot of interest in the urban farms that are using organic methods. So on some of the abandoned plots where people, you know, some people have community farms, which are great. People participate in growing food together. But some of those plots are being turned over to farmers who are willing to grow food and then sell it. And, you know, that creates a second income for a number of people that, you know, live in some of the areas that are more at risk in Minneapolis, and they're selling that food to their neighbors, which is terrific. Mm-hmm. So we're finding ways to build out the food system, and it's going to be different in every area. And I think that's the other thing we need to address, is to understand that our country is so huge and so diverse that what's going to work in one area isn't necessarily going to work in another area. So we have to be nimble enough to look at what's going to be best for that community, both, you know, in terms of what that land is, as well as, you know, what the ethnicity of that, you know, region is and what people want to eat and that kind of thing.
We're talking with Beth Dooley. I want to make sure people know who's giving us all this wonderful information. She's a chef and a food writer. You know, while you were talking about community gardens and some of the plots and lots that are being used for growing food, there are some areas of the country where they're allowing people to actually use their front yards in an urban area to grow food, but Minneapolis isn't one of those yet, is it?
Well, they say they're not, but they don't enforce that.
Okay.
You know, a lot of my neighbors have, edible gardens in their front yards. I think it's more about, you know, are you going to take care of it? And they're beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really cool. In fact, the woman that I co-authored Minnesota's Bounty with, and the photos are beautiful in that. And the same thing with Savory Sweet, Meta Nielsen. She's an amazing photographer. Her whole front and backyard are an edible garden, and they're gorgeous. They're mm-hmm. currant berries, and there's a little apple tree and a cherry tree, and it's really pretty, mm-hmm. you know. And so she's done a nice job with it. So, you know, I think unless somebody complains, but they're certainly not giving citations to people that are growing tomatoes in their front yard if they look nice. You know?
Yes.
Really.
So, Beth Dooley, your book, In Winter's Kitchen, was a Minnesota Book Awards finalist in 2016. Congratulations.
Yes, thank you.
And are there any new books or collaborations in the works?
Yeah, we just had a book launch for a book that I worked on with a wonderful native chef called the Sous Chef, John Sherman. And that just came out, so people should look for that. It's called The Sous Chef's Indigenous Kitchen, and it's over 100 recipes of this fabulous native food.
And Sioux is spelled S-I-O-U-X.
Yes, it's a play on words.
Right,
yeah.
Right, exactly. And is that sort of to reclaim their heritage, the food that,
yeah,
instead of the, you know, white flour, white sugar,
exactly,
blah.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly right. It's, you know, it's looking at the food that grew here. It's pre-colonial food. So
right.
It's what grew here
go.
Before the Europeans arrived. Mm-hmm. And you know, let's look at the health issues around European food. You know, we're talking about white flour and sugar and, lots of unhealthy dairy. So this is, you know, it's really on trend. It's wheat-free, dairy-free, sugar-free, you know, lean meats. I mean, and what I loved about working on this book is it really opened my eyes to a number of ingredients that I never considered working with, things like cedar and juniper and bergamot. So there are recipes for using a lot of the things that are right outside my backyard, in my backyard, that I never understood were actually healthful ingredients that are delicious, you know. So there's a wonderful recipe for cedar tea with maple, and a braised bison with juniper, and some interesting duck recipes. There are pemmican recipes in there. It's fun. It's a really fun book.
Oh, I could talk to you forever, but we're running out of time. Is there a website or a blog that people can go to? Can you give us that?
Absolutely, yes. It's just BethDooleysKitchen.com.
All right. Beth Dooley, chef, food writer, award-winning author, thank you so much for joining us on the Roadhouse.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thank you.
All right.